Welcome to Water of the Word, the radio ministry of Pastor Steve Hadley of Harvest Family Fellowship in Reno. Join us today as Pastor Steve looks at today's events already foretold by God's Word. The Bible stands alone. No other book in history has such specific and detailed descriptions of the world we live in right now. So come on along. May we all be refreshed and inspired as we are washed by the water of the Word.
I used to think that the church age was sort of an arbitrary time. Watch this. Everybody okay with all these numbers and stuff? Is anybody dying? We have water and resuscitation equipment in the back if you'd like. Turn to the left. I want to show you something else just as startling. Old Testament book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 4. Now, remember when I said that there was the first siege of Nebuchadnezzar in 606 BC? And that's when Daniel is deported. Then there's a second deportation. And that's when Ezekiel, this man here, that's when he is deported. He is also writing from Babylon. Then there is a third siege, at which time Jerusalem is destroyed utterly. Join me in chapter 4 of Ezekiel, and let me show you something that's very bizarre and somewhat peculiar. Chapter 4, verse 1. All right, he says, "You, son of man, Ezekiel, take a clay tablet, lay it in front of you, and draw on it a city of Jerusalem." So make a little model. "Then I want you to lay siege against this map that you drew out. Build a little siege wall around it and heap up mound all around it and set camps against it and place battering rams against it all around. Make a little model of Jerusalem being laid siege to." So he does. "Moreover, take for yourself an iron plate. Set it as an iron wall between you and the city. You're going to be facing away against it, an iron plate between you and then the little model that you just made." What is Ezekiel doing? He is pretending to be a model of the Father. "Set your face against it, and it shall be besieged, and you shall lay siege against it, and this will be a sign to the house of Israel." So while he's doing that, he's doing it outside, and the people of Israel in captivity in Babylon are walking by going, "What's up, Ezekiel?" He says, "Nothing, making a little model here of Jerusalem." "Well, what's with the siege wall?" "Well, you'll have to find out. How come the plate and how come you're facing, your back is to it?" It was supposed to stir the curiosity of those passing by. "Here's what I want you to do, Ezekiel. I want you to lie on your left side and lay the iniquity or the sins of the house of Israel upon it." If you don't know, there was a civil war of sorts in before Ezekiel's time. And the 10 northern tribes called Israel collectively and the southern two tribes collectively called Judah. "So lay on your left side, lay the iniquity of the house of Israel, the northern 10 tribes, according to the number of days that you lie on it. You shall bear their iniquities. For I have laid on you the years of their iniquity according to the number of days." Here's what I want you to do. "I want you to lay on the one side for 390 days. So 390 days is going to be laying on his left side with this little model there in front of him. People going, "What are you doing, Ezekiel?" "I'm laying on my left side." Why? Because every day that I lay on my left side, it's a year that Israel owes God because of their transgression. Verse 6. "And when you have completed them," these 390, "lie again on your right side, and you shall bear the iniquity of the house of Judah for 40 days. So he's going to flop over like a pancake, and now he's going to lay on his other side. "I have laid on you a day for each year." All right, you ready for some math? All right, so 390 plus 40 equals 430. How long were they in captivity there in Babylon? Do you remember? 70. So let's subtract 430 from 430. Let's subtract 70 for time served. And then that's going to leave us with 360 days. Question. Where in the scriptures do you ever find these 360 years, really, of when they paid back God for their iniquity? I've never been able to find it. It wasn't until a few years ago when Chuck Missler, who was getting together with Hal Lindsey, and they got to looking at this, and they couldn't find the 360 years depicted anywhere either in Jewish history. Until somebody remembered, wait a minute, now join me in the Old Testament Pentateuch book of Leviticus, chapter 26. And so Chuck and Pal Lindsey, they got together, they started looking this over. Check out Leviticus chapter 26. Now we are, in Moses' writing, we're about 1,500 years before Jesus. Had Israel sinned everybody? They sure had. God took them away to Babylon for 70 years. Now they're coming back. Not all at once. They came back in several waves. Then it was Chuck Minster who said, check this out. Verse 18 of Leviticus 26. Now after all this, if you, Israel, do not obey me, then I will punish you 7 times more. Look at verse 21 toward the end. I will bring upon you 7 times more. Verse 24 at the end. 7 times for your transgressions. End of verse 28. 7 times. Do you think God is trying to tell them something? If you come back from Babylon, let's say, and you still don't have the idol bug down, and you are still in sin, is it conceivable that God would multiply their time they owed God by 7 times? That's what Mr. postulated, and he said, well, let's give it a shot. 360 days times 7, just for grins, equals 2,520 years. And remember, you have to times that times their calendar of 360 days, and 2,520 years times 360 days equals 907,200 days. So for grins, let's pretend that that's what the nation of Israel owes God for the transgressions. Now with that in mind, now comes your history lesson. Are you ready? In 606 BC, Nebuchadnezzar takes the nation of Israel captive. He has to lay siege to it 3 times, and finally the 3rd time, he destroys it. Well, you're going to have to fast forward the film to the year 537 BC. There was a guy by the name of King Cyrus. As the Babylonian Empire wanes, the next up-and-coming great empire that was going to affect this region is going to be the Medo-Persian Empire, led by an amazing man by the name of King Cyrus. There's Babylon held up in its wall city. Can't get us, Cyrus. Walls 300 feet high. And at the top, they were so wide that they raced chariots across the top 4 abreast. An amazing, impenetrable city. And by the way, by this time, Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, Belshazzar, he's running the show. He exiles old man Daniel, who helped his dad quite a bit, or grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, and he exiles him. Well, they hear that King Cyrus is on the roll, and he's on his way to Babylon. You know what Belshazzar does? He says, let him come, let's throw a party. He throws a great big party. And that's when this hand appears, and his finger of the hand writes on the wall, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. He's all, ah, and the Bible says in King James, his knees smote one against the other, and his bowels were loosed. You know what I'm saying? And so everybody's freaking out. Ah, nobody can read it because it's in a dialect that's not known to him. Who do they wrestle out of the retirement home? Old man Daniel. Daniel comes in and says, you're a fool, grandson of the great King Nebuchadnezzar. Tonight, you're going to lose your kingdom in one night. Here's what's happening. 2 days in front of that, Cyrus's forces, what they do is they capture this inconsequential little city, a city called Opus. And so what? Big deal. Who cares? And what he does there at Opus also had to be a kind of a quarterback for all the system of irrigation canals. You know what Cyrus does? He diverts the mighty Euphrates River that ran right through the city of Babylon. Go ahead, lay siege to us. We have plenty of water and plenty of warehouses of food. Go ahead. We got 300-foot-high walls. So what they do is they divert the Euphrates River into the canal systems. And at the castle, or I should say at the walls, the water level drops significantly. 2 of his crack commandos go under the wall, run around to the main gate, overpower the guards there, and opened the huge gates of Babylon, and in came Cyrus's forces and took the city in one night. That battle is so amazing that it is still studied in military institutions of this day. It's an amazing conquest. And literally, the people of Babylon literally went to bed with their officers on the corner of each street in one uniform, and the next morning, they were new guys in brand new uniforms. About 2 weeks later, in rides King Cyrus. Pomp and circumstances with their enemies in chains behind them. What a great story. And then the Jewish history tells us that when he came riding in, he was met there by a rickety old man of upwards of 100 years old, Daniel. He says, King Cyrus, we knew you were coming. Join me in the book of Isaiah chapter 44. If you don't know that this is tucked away in your Bible, you really should know that it's there. What Daniel does is he unrolls a scroll of Isaiah. And he rolls to the point of Isaiah chapter 44. And here's what he says. Let me read something to you, O great King Cyrus. Look at verse 28. God who says of, read the next word with me, Cyrus. Isaiah wrote this 150 years before Cyrus was even born. Here you are, who says to Cyrus, he is my shepherd. He shall perform all my pleasure, saying to Jerusalem, you shall be built again. And the temple and your foundations will be laid. Thus says Jehovah to his anointed, Cyrus, whose right hand I have upheld, to subdue nations before him, to loose the armor of kings. That's a Hebrew word that can also be translated loins. To subdue nations and loose the loins of a sniveling king, Belteshazzar. To open before him the double doors, because that's how they did it. So that the gates shall not be shut. Look at verse 3. I will give you, Cyrus, the treasures of darkness, the hidden riches of secret places. Why? That you may know that I am the Lord, who call you by your name. How many had no idea this was nestled in the book of Isaiah, that 150 years before the man was born, God prophesies and calls him by name? He's so impressed, he's all, when was this written? And Daniel said, 150 years before you're born. He goes, no way. And then all the other people who've been copying the scriptures, it was in there. He says, wow. He is so impressed that what does he do? He does what chapter 44, verse 20, it says he will do. He issues a decree for the Jews to go home again. It's a very well-known date in history. Well, but after that, about 7 or so years later, Cyrus dies in battle. His son, Cambyses, comes to the throne and takes over in about 529 BC. He rules for a while, about 9 years, until 520 BC, when Cambyses himself dies because his brother, a guy by the name of Smerdis, while Cambyses is off fighting the war, Smerdis is at home politicking and winning all the Iowa elections and everything. So he's going to try to mount a campaign against his brother. When Cambyses hears about it, he rattles to his mount so hurriedly that he accidentally stabs himself with his own dagger and he dies. Then another guy by the name of Darius is risen up. He quells the rebellion of Smerdis, and now he, Darius, is the king of Persia. Now this is about 518 now. Darius is now in control. How many of you remember in your Old Testament the books of Haggai and Zechariah? They were prophets about this time in 518. They knew that King Cyrus gave the decree to rebuild the city of Jerusalem. But if you remember the story, when they came back, there was a group of people there that didn't let them. And they struggled, and they struggled, and they struggled. It was Haggai and Zechariah who petitioned Darius, go check the library. Your predecessor, King Cyrus, said there is a decree and it needs to be enforced. And he said, no, he didn't. And they're all, yes, he did. They searched the libraries, and Ezra chapter 6 documents that they found it. So Darius said, well, I guess you're right. He then issues another decree, and that was the year 518 BC. Really, we're going to go somewhere with this. You guys ready? Let's review. The first siege of Nebuchadnezzar was 606 BC. Did he destroy Jerusalem at that time? Answer? No. He installed a vassal king. Then there was a second siege, and then a third siege. So remember how long they were supposed to be in Babylon? 70 years. So 70 years later, guess what? You do the math. 606 BC minus 70 is approximately 537. Remember that date I told you about of 907,200 days? The 360 years that nobody could figure out? What if it was multiplied by 7 and the actual solar days would be 907,200 days or 2,483 years, 9 months, and 14 days. They lost their nation in 606 BC. Subtract 70 years for time served. Then you add 2,483 years, 9 months, and 14 days. Then you would expect to see the restoration of the nation of Israel. They lost their nation in 606 BC. They lost Jerusalem 19 years later. The third siege, Jerusalem, is lost. Let's do the math again. 70 years, there's Darius's decree in 518 BC. If they lost Jerusalem, let's attach that 2,483 years, 9 months, and 14 days, we should arrive at the restoration of Jerusalem. Can you see how that would work? That date in 537 BC was in the summertime. We don't know the exact date, but just for grins, if it was July the 23rd, don't know, but it could be, if you add to July 23rd in 537 BC, you add 2,483 years, 9 months, and 14 days, you know what date you come up with in modern history? May 14th, 1948. That's the year that Israel became a nation again. After 19 centuries, Israel was lost as a nation in 606 BC, and Ezekiel in chapter 4 is saying, here's the time clock. 70 years served. 360 years were left, but they didn't learn their lesson. I had to times it times 7. God is literally keeping track to the day. What happens, this is May 14th, 1948, that is in Tel Aviv, that is Ben-Gurion standing at the podium. Behind him is the portrait of Theodore Herzl, the founder of the Zionist movement, who almost single-handedly resurrected the Hebrew language. That is May 14th, 1948. That is a fulfillment of Bible prophecy and potentially to the day that God said it would happen. They lost their nation in 606 BC. If Ezekiel 4 is correct and you do the math, it's conceivable that exactly 907,200 days later, bang, May 14th, 1948. They lost Jerusalem in the third siege in 587 BC. There's Darius's decree in 518, Ezra chapter 6. Let's for grins add 2,483 years, 9 months, 14 days. We would expect to see the restoration of Jerusalem. You come up with June 7th, 1967. Does that ring a bell? That's the Six Days War. These are IDF soldiers. The war, Six Days War, began June the 5th. A few days later, under Moshe Dayan, they actually captured Jerusalem. Do you see those soldiers there? Do you see the look on their face? Can you see and discern what is above their head? It looks like stones, doesn't it? Do you know what that is? That's the Western Wall. That's the Wailing Wall. That's the last of the temple that was remained that the Romans didn't destroy. Today it's called the Wailing Wall. Jews hadn't been at the Wailing Wall in 19 centuries. On June 7th, 1967, conceivably according to Ezekiel chapter 4, they arrived on the exact day. This one particularly interests me. The fella in the middle, that's Moshe Dayan. You can't see it, but he's got an eye patch. And I've never been able to confirm it, but it has been said that when he came in on the 7th with bullets still pinging off from snipers, still pinging off the pink Jerusalem stone of the Western Wall, he reaches into his jacket and pulls out, it is said, his grandfather's prayer shawl. Takes off his helmet and puts his grandfather's yarmulke on and pulls out his grandfather's prayer book. And it is said that Moshe Dayan and the soldiers that were with him were the first Jews to pray near the temple in 19 centuries. How amazing is that, everybody? Join me in Matthew chapter 24. We'll end here. Remember how I said everybody's been saying, you know, the end is near, the end is near, the end is near. Do you understand now that there is an actual framework at work? I showed you the first 69 weeks. We're in the church age now. We're waiting for the rapture. And then after the church is gone, then the Antichrist is going to do his deal, the 70th week of Daniel. And in the 70th week of Daniel, you're going to have all 7 of the seals of the book of Revelation happen. And at its conclusion in Revelation 19, that ends the 70th week of Daniel. In Matthew chapter 24, after his triumphal entry, he's rejected as Messiah. He goes back and forth to Jerusalem, and he still teaches. And then he says in verse 4, Jesus answered and said to them, "Take heed that no one deceives you. Do your homework. For many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,'" and he goes on. For the next couple of verses, if you know what you're looking at, Jesus literally is going to tell them about the 7 seals of the book of Revelation. Now join me in chapter 24, almost to the end. Join me in verse 32. He talks about much of the detail of the 70th week of Daniel, right down to when the abomination of desolations happens. 3.5 years in, the Antichrist says, forget it. He chases the Jews, changes his stripes. He moves from a man of peace, but now the whole planet is in war. 3.5 years in, he says, forget about it. There's no more ruse of peace at this point. He goes after the Jews, the remnant of the Jews, who take hold, I should say, in the rock city of Petra. And then what he does is he puts a statue of himself in the Holy of Holies. Now watch this. So the disciples who said, when's this going to happen? And he tells them all these verses. And by the time we get to verse 32, now learn this parable from the fig tree. Now, this is a literal fig tree, to be sure, but how many of you know that the fig tree symbolically is always standing for the nation of Israel? Judges 9, verses 8 through 15, Jeremiah 24, verses 1 through 10, and Isaiah 66, verse 8. If he is speaking metaphorically, and he is, then the fig tree is not a literal fig tree. It's what? It's the nation of Israel. Now learn this parable from the fig tree, or if you will, the nation of Israel. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. When the spring happens, they become tender to the touch, their buds come forth. You know enough about trees to know that what's coming? Summer's coming. So you also, verse 33, when you see all of these things, all that he's talked about, verse 33, so you also, when you see all these things happen, know that the end is near, even at the door. And here's our closing thought. Truly, truly, assuredly, I say that this generation that sees these things will by no means pass away until, what's your next word? And what is all, everybody? All of the seals of the book of Revelation, the entirety of the 70th week of Daniel, the generation that sees Israel bloom, Israel bud, Israel become a nation again, the generation that sees that will by no means pass away until all of these things take place. So, when your grandma and grandpa said Jesus is coming back and it's the end of the age, I could certainly see why they would have that understanding, but would it have been premature according to this map? Are we near something similar?
You've been listening to a recent prophetic update by Pastor Steve. What a comfort to know that no matter what the headlines are saying, everything is proceeding just as God has foretold. If you missed any of today's message or would like to hear it in its full, unedited format, you can watch this or any of Pastor Steve's teachings at our website. Just visit us at harvestreno.org. That's www.harvestreno.org. Come join us Sundays at 10:30 and Wednesday evenings at 6:30. Harvest is located at 350 South Rock Boulevard in Reno. Until next time, Pastor Steve encourages all of us to follow Acts 2:42 and Word, Worship, Prayer, and Fellowship every day. May the Lord bless you and keep you as we are washed by the water of the Word.